All right, quieting down now. Live from the Brit and Yankee Pub Studios. Another Brit and Yankee craft beer pubcast. I can hear the pints being pulled right now. Take it away, lad. You are paying for that beer, aren't you?
Pump up the bitter. Pump up the bitter.
Well, welcome everybody for another pubcast. This is pubcast number 337. And this time round, my good mate and guest host for the day, Ken McMullen from Hot Vine, is with me.
Buenos mañana.
Ooh, Phil. I say. That's tomorrow, isn't it?
It also means morning, and we still got 15 minutes of that left.
Well, Ken, you've driven out with me 90 minutes from the Brit and Yankee pub, and we have come out on, what's the expressway to Rotford, 90?
Yes.
Okay, 90. We come out on 90, and then we took a little jiggy jog on to basically 39 and on to 20. And hey, we're in Freeport, Illinois, yeah. Which apparently is quite an interesting little place from what we read on Wikipedia.
Yeah, Pretzel City.
Of course, we're not here for any of that stuff. We're here for a brewery, and we are at Generations Brewing Company. And sitting with us is...
Stephen Winter, owner and brewmaster.
There you go. Look at that. We only get the best on the show. And Stephen, this whole podcast came about because I saw that a good buddy of yours, Carson Souza, who is now doing Obscurity Brewing, although I don't think he's brewing at Obscurity yet. In fact, I don't think they've even got the place built, have they?
They are in the middle of build-out. Actually, they're pretty close to completion right now.
Ah, splendid.
Yes.
So he came out and brewed with you and posted it on Facebook or somewhere I saw it.
That is correct. We have started brewing their brands for them to get the beer out into the market before they're ready to open up their facility, which should be happening here by the close to the beginning of the year of 2020.
Excellent. And we did a podcast with Carson when he was at Pig Mines in Rotford.
Mm-hmm.
And so I pinged him and said, hey, you think Steve would do it? Is it Steve or Stephen? We've got to get that right. Stephen.
Yeah, Stephen's just fine.
All right, I don't know, because I don't like...
No formality here.
My name is Philip, right? And I don't like to be called Philip for some reason. I prefer Phil. There we go. But
I was always called Kenneth when I was in trouble. So
yes, that's right. That's yes, I was too. Yes.
They called you Kenneth when you got in trouble?
Yeah.
That is so weird.
See, I always got...
Good one.
If I was in trouble, I always got the middle name attached.
Uh-oh.
Oh, yeah.
So I was Stephen Mark.
Yeah. Stephen Mark, what are you doing?
Yes.
Besides brewing?
Which happens to be my father's name and my business partner as well.
All right, there we go. And, well, let's start right at that point, because Generations Brewing, obviously the name suggests that you have several generations of Winters. Winter has come to Freeport.
Winter has come.
And it has come in the version of Generations Brewing. So let's talk about how you came to do this from the perspective of your family.
Sure. Because I absolutely love talking about myself, sarcastically. as a family, I guess, we are very fortunate. My family's other business is commercial construction. So, you know, we've been in Freeport as long as our name goes back. And we've been doing commercial construction in the area and the whole region, doing all sorts of fun stuff, banks, schools, hospitals mainly. And I think that's one of our strongest points is...
Did you work at the construction company at any time?
Yep. I used to be on the demolition crew when I was going through college and all that. That was my summer job and all that. So I was very lucky to... learn the business of construction and have that engineering background, you know, as I went through school for industrial design and product development. And so I decided to become a little bit more of an artist and specify in product development for personal products, but as I fell in love with craft beer along with my family, we decided...
What, you fell in love with your family at the same time?
Well, no. As long as my family fell in love with craft beer at the same time. It just so happened my eldest sister was living in Portland, Oregon, and which was craft beer mecca.
Yeah, right.
And then my older brother also moved out there too, so we were constantly going out there to see them. And my older brother happens to be an architect, and so we kind of all put everything together and decided if we were going to do something great and design and develop products for the rest of our lives, it should be our favorite one.
So that's pretty cool that you could do that, the whole family. And because when I first came out here, which was about 2.5 years ago, when I was doing the Joe Davis Triangle. Well, you're not actually in Joe Davis County. You're in Stevenson County,
right?
We are
in Stevenson County,
yes. So
you're
on this side of the border, right?
Yep.
But there was a triangle, and now there's a quadrangle, I guess, because now not only do you have Lena, Galena, Generations, but you also have Wishful Acres, who I think is probably the newest one out here, right?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay. Yep. So it wouldn't be a podcast if we weren't sampling some of your beers. This was one of the beers that I really wanted to taste when I came out here. Tell us about it. It's an IPA.
Correct.
Right? But it's a special IPA because...
It's a very special IPA. This is our fourth quarterly seasonal called the Wintergreen IPA. And the fun thing about it is that it is a double IPA with all centennial hops. And the great part about it is that we actually boil in spruce tips. And it's not just a flavor to add to the pininess of the hops itself and the character of the IPA that we want to achieve, but those pines actually come from a very specific and very important source. There's a story behind all of our beers, and this one has a really good one, for example. So we actually took the fresh spruce tips from a tree from my mother's backyard. And when my grandmother, my mother's mother, passed away, all of her friends bought her a blue spruce tree to plant in her backyard in memorial of my grandmother. Mm-hmm. And so we take the spruce tips at the end of the year, at the fall, right before the tree starts to kind of go dormant and branches, you know, brown out a little bit. We take the last fresh cuts off of the branches and we boil those into the beer.
And how much of that do you actually use? Because I know, Ken, you had said you wanted to make something similar to this.
Mm-hmm.
And our other co-host, who's Chuck Fort from Church Street, have wanted to do a juniper one. And there's a slight difference, I think, if you're a plant person.
Sure, sure.
So how much do you take?
We use about 20 pounds of spruce tips.
Okay.
Which doesn't sound like a lot, but that's about 3 full garbage bags full. It's a lot because obviously the plant material doesn't weigh much, so you know physically it's a lot of material to
you do a full
to
batch
process.
Of this?
We yep, absolutely.
Wow. Full batch is 20 barrels.
20 barrels of this. Actually, we did 40 barrels of it. We did a double batch. Yep, and we actually bottle this brand as well. So this is not only available in draft, but it is available in.
And you didn't say you said it was a double IPA. So what are we looking at here? Because it tastes 5 or 6%, very nicely balanced.
Yep, it's actually about 8%.
Oh,
about 7.98%. So it's on the stronger side of the IPA scale. We call it a double IPA because it is a little bit stronger on the ABV side, but it is about 90 some IBUs.
So,
so you're getting all the punch of all the centennial hops.
It does not,
along with pine.
It doesn't have a big IBU backbone to
and
it, you know, as far as I'm concerned.
I'll take that as a compliment because a lot of our IPAs will read that high on IBU scales, but we have such a huge malt backbone to go behind it to take care of it so that you don't really have to suffer through that pungent bitterness. There's something there to
ease it.
Are
you suffering through the pungent bitterness?
No.
You would never think
it was over
90 IBUs.
You said everything I was
going
to say. I'm telling you that it says 92 IBUs, but you don't perceive that because there is so much malt character. The pininess on the nose is just awesome. It's not overwhelming, but it's,
no,
it's,
exactly.
It's there. It's really nice beer.
Mm.
Beautiful, too. It's clear.
It is,
it's like a deep gold.
It's got...
Oh, thanks, guys.
It's got that kind of winter feel to it because of that pininess, and I really like piney IPAs. You know, I call those real IPAs, right? I'm not into the hazy, although I can appreciate it. So, having brought up hazy, we'll get this out of the way. Yeah. Do you do one?
We do not.
All right.
I'm not into the haze fad. You know, I like to use fruit when fruit's needed, but I don't expect my hops to achieve that character. I prefer a much more resinous, piney bitter out of my hops.
And so,
kind of a little bit more of a traditional classic brewer.
And so does that, bringing it back around to the Freeport area, does that suggest that your demographic clientele are more the traditional classic style drinkers?
Yeah, we definitely have a Midwestern demographic out here. We actually have the benefit of, you know, being able to do the crazy, weird, experimental stuff and toy with that and be successful with it in the city, in Chicago. But out here on our turf, you know, we really focus on classic lagers. Lager brewing.
Yeah, we are drinking an IPA.
Yes, so. To start with. But I've got plenty of some really, really good lagers for you guys to taste later.
Excellent.
On here.
Yeah, I was looking through the list, and there's a Helles on there. There's a Pilsner.
The Maybach is amazing.
And the Helles, if I remember rightly, was slightly different because it's a honey Helles.
It is. It is actually a little bit of a hybrid, too. So we do use Kolsch ale yeast as well, but it is mostly fermented in cold condition in traditional Helles style on Munich lager yeast.
And does the honey come locally?
It does, yep. Okay. It's actually grown right here on the estate.
Oh, really? Oh, wait a minute, the estate. Yeah. So we're sitting on...
21 acres of property here.
It's 21 acres.
Yep.
Okay. Now, do you custom? So, going back to the family and your construction business.
Mm-hmm.
So, you designed and built this place, or
we
was
did.
It here already?
Nope. We completely designed and built it ourselves.
Okay.
Top to bottom.
So it's got kind of a barn feel to it. And
it's
Ken, we were looking at some of the barns on the way out here, and they were the traditional wooden type styles.
Yep.
This one is more of an industrial barn.
It's like a metal building. It's open. It's like two stories in height, but it's completely open to the ceiling. Corrugated steel on the walls and big support beams.
Yeah.
But that's what lets it be all wide open, right?
It's a giant support beam. It's a giant steel structure. We actually won some awards for the design of the building through Star Metal Buildings, who manufactures the equipment, for their regional and national awards, which was really nice. The whole idea was to kind of basically feel rural, but have a little bit more contemporary style to it. And
yeah,
it's cool. Got a great big roll-up glass garage door.
We're all sitting at a 14-foot glass garage door that opens up to our beautiful beer garden.
Yeah, that was when I came here. It was during the summer months, and there was plenty of people out there. Although, if I remember rightly, when I came, it was a particularly cold day, and there was a slight rain in the air, so it wasn't that warm out there. But you've got hops growing there. Now, do you use these hops in some of
your
beers?
Yep.
So, what were they?
We've got Centennials, Nuggets, Zeus's, and Cascades. They all go into our fresh hop beer that we make every year called the Rowdy IPA.
Okay.
Which I would love to give you guys a sample
of.
Is
that a smash?
No, because there's multiple varieties of hops and multiple varieties of barley that go into that as well. So it's an estate smash for the...
It's a what? Estate smash.
It's the estate smash. It's all of our hops and plus more, but...
Yeah. Well, we're definitely going to taste those. I think I want to take a break now and come back, because staring me in the face is another one of your darker beers, completely opposite of what we've had, which is a fifth anniversary beer, I guess.
It is,
which tells us a tale of how long you've been open. So we'll come back in just a second and find out how you got this place going. beer that we have in front of us is, as I said in the previous segment, completely opposite in terms of color to our IPA. This is a beautiful dark black stout, right?
Yep.
And this was your fifth anniversary ale, and you're calling it Cranacopia. Tell us about it whilst we taste.
We don't carry stouts year-round, so when we do get to do stouts, we take extra special care of them. So this is actually an American double stout, 8% alcohol, and we both boiled and fermented it on organic cranberry puree. It didn't lend much of a sweetness from the fruit, but it definitely lended the acidity from the cranberries. So you'll get the tartness in the background, and it'll finish kind of in the back of your mouth, like after just drinking, like, you know, cranberry cocktail juice. But you won't taste it.
If you have cranberry juice uncut, that's really good for bladder infections. I just want to let you know that.
Yes.
But it is the tartest stuff you're ever going to taste. Sorry, back to the story.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a nice mouthfeel. It's a character that I wanted in the beer. It wasn't a flavor I wanted, but it was a character that I wanted, an attribute. And then we finish it off with black walnuts and a black walnut extract, along with some black walnuts that we kind of chopped up and boiled into as well. So,
and before we started this, I was telling you I have black walnuts all over my yard. So
yes.
Next year, if you need black walnuts, just let me know.
I think that's going to happen.
I'd love to give it to some. We've got a lot of them in the area, and some woman bags them up and puts some free black walnuts, and people go, oh, yeah, we'll have the walnuts. But they're really a pain in the butt to get into and dry. So you said you used an extract, which obviously that's the easy way. Let someone else do the work.
Yeah, with nuts, it's really hard to achieve a flavor if you're not using some sort of extract out of it, because you really need that concentrate. But the fun part about it is this beer is so new. We're still in the middle of packaging it. It's still in our bright tank right now. Mm-hmm. So we are about to pick up some whiskey barrels, local.
Ooh.
I won't give out any names yet, but... it'll be a fun project to get that beer sitting in some whiskey barrels.
So maybe that'll be the sixth anniversary.
Yes, and if you have, that's the plan. Okay. And if you happen to have some black walnut limbs from the tree that we could get, we'd love to throw that inside the barrel with
it. I just had a thought, actually. I chopped up some black walnut pieces that fell down because I was going to burn them. And I'll go searching in my log pile for those, and then we'll split those up. Yes,
let's get those sitting in that barrel with those.
Absolutely. Ken, I don't know about you, but when I sample this beer initially, I get kind of a vanilla-y aroma from it, and a little bit of a vanilla up front, and then it's got a tremendously chewy mouthfeel to it. And then tartness at the end, and I'm thinking that tartness is the cranberry, and then dryness, which comes, I think, from the black walnut, right?
Yeah, you get that. Definitely that sweet vanilla is definitely coming from both the malt and the black walnut.
Really?
And then, as you say, it's kind of got a chewy body, so that tells you're drinking a double stout. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Everything you need there.
It's body, for an 8% beer, to me, it's kind of light-bodied for that.
It is.
And it's easy drinking.
I think that's where the cranberries come in and do their job with the acidity and clean that off of your palate.
Yeah. It's nice. It's jet black. You can't see even through the edge of it. Nice tan head on it. Aroma-wise, I guess vanilla is what I would say that is.
Sure.
But you get the roast from the malt, from the dark malts.
It definitely sticks to the side.
With the finish, legs.
It actually has
legs, right?
Yeah.
That finish is definitely the nut and the finish. The cranberry tartness is kind of buried in with the malt sweetness. Like it really balances nicely. It's really a delicious beer.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. And a lot of times when we make beers like this, you know, everyone's like, oh, it doesn't taste like cranberries, or it doesn't taste like, you know, this and that. And it's like, well, that wasn't the point. It wasn't to make the beer taste like that. The point was to use those ingredients as attributes to the beer to make it an amazing double stout.
So, all those flavors come together and form a better, like they add to each other rather than, everybody wants to discern every single thing that you put in a beer.
It's still a beer and I still want it to taste like a stout. Those things are there just to help along the way, not be dominant flavors.
I like your philosophy.
So pursuing that aspect a little bit, obviously coming into this particular area of the country, you know, again, out this way, it seems like you are more of the traditional domestic beer drinkers this way. And you've been here for 5 years. Have you kind of created an educational program for people here to say, you know, here's the type of beers that we're having and here's the sort of things that you need to expect from them?
Absolutely. I mean, that's 100% of the game is, you know, obviously not just educating your customers, but showing them what's available and having the fun conversation with them, saying, you know, like, I know you like cranberry and walnut aren't like real exotic ingredients, but put in the right place at the right time into a beer, you know, here's what it is. And we've been extremely successful doing it that way.
So 5 years ago, you said, okay, we're going to, you know, break ground here, get this thing going. Was it 5 years ago that you opened, and then how long was the construction ahead of that?
So it was 5 years ago. It was actually the end of October of 2014 that we brewed our first batch in this facility. It took us just over 2 years prior to design and develop the company itself and the brewery. So yeah, kind of at the same time I was finishing up my tenure at Galena Brewing Company, where I'd been working since 2010, running that facility, which was wonderful. Love those guys, making great beer still. If you guys get a chance to get out there, go see them out there in Galena. You know, and definitely stop by here on your way, because we're in the path. So
that's right. You're in the triangle.
Yeah, and that's
the quadrangle now. Sorry.
That's the best part about the whole brewing industry is that we're all in this together, and so we all support each other 110%. So when we want somebody to come see us, we want somebody to come see everybody. You know,
right.
This is just a better reason for anybody to get out here in the corner of the state to taste some great beers.
So 5 years. Went past and you're here today making some interesting stuff. But prior to you even going to Galena, you said you were in industrial design. So, you know, how the hell did you get from industrial design to brewing? I mean, I can see the construction piece of it. But
sure.
Brewing the beer.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I've always been an artist at heart through many mediums, whether it's computer design, graphic design, industrial design, architecture, painting, sculpting, ceramics. I do a lot of ceramics still. Tons and tons of drawing. You know, it all just comes back to the basics of, you know, when you have something you want to create, where do you start and how do you fulfill that? What mediums do you have to create the things that you want to do? And obviously, you know, being in love with craft brewing and making beer is a wonderful thing, and that was a medium that I chose to start a business with. But that doesn't neglect my chances to continue to draw and paint and do other things, play the drums that you guys can see sitting up.
Is that
upstairs.
One of your paintings on the wall?
That one's not mine. Oh. Actually, I don't have any of my paintings in here. I wish I did, but I keep those kind of under wraps. But there is a lot of art on the walls here in the tap room and stuff. This is all my photography. So if you see anything, all the photoshops and the big printouts of the brewing equipment stuff, yeah.
So you mentioned the drums up. There's an upper level here, which I'm assuming is just for the drummers.
Yep.
So you were into music?
That's my mezzanine,
music?
So, yep. I'm a musician, too. So, you know, it's just the accumulation of being an artist and picking what medium I want to choose that day to do something with. But
so what sort of music is it?
Oh, whatever it needs to be. Oh. I'm into everything. I'm a metalhead at heart, but my all-time favorite band is still Steely Dan.
All right. Cool. Yeah. There you go.
I've seen them so many times live, and I will...
do you play gigs here then?
What's that?
Do you play gigs here? Do you have come in and do it?
I don't personally. I hire people out to do that, so I don't have to embarrass myself. But yeah, we have live music on the weekends and stuff when we can, and I make fun of it. And you know, we have a lot of food trucks that come out, and that's another beautiful thing about our tap room. It's very small, but it hosts really good parties. And we don't have a kitchen or a restaurant, so we don't have our own menu. But we have food trucks that show up regularly. Mm-hmm. We also have a completely open food policy. So anybody's more than welcome to order in any carry out or get food delivered here. Even if they want to just bring out their own meat and cheese snacks or whatever. We also have a grill outside in our beer garden, so people can use that. To come out and picnic and grill out their own meats and everything that they want to. So
they grill in this weather?
I have had people grill in the winter. Yes. Yep. Absolutely.
You say this tap room's small, but it does not feel small with the airspace in here and the way it's laid out. It's a center island bar with seats all the way around it. It feels really open. It doesn't feel tight at all.
Mm-hmm. So. You've had a lot of people coming in here who are new to craft brewing in this area?
Yeah. You know, being out here in the Midwest, we were kind of obviously over the coast the last wave of getting hit with craft beer. Yeah. But it seemed to come full round, and we've definitely experienced everything from A to Z. You know, as far as our basic craft domestic beer drinkers, you know, who will come out and expect something like a Bud Light or whatnot. But, you know, we have answers to that. We make extremely great light lagers. Mm-hmm. And then we have everybody coming out from the city and from all over the region who are expecting bigger and better things than that. And we have those answers, too.
And I think we should talk about distribution. You say coming out from the city. I'm assuming you're referring to Rockford and Chicago, right? Mm-hmm. Well, I guess Rockford's a big city now, right?
Yeah. Rockford's almost 200,000 people. And then with the other cities kind of surrounding McChesney Park and Loves Park and all that, they're close to about 300,000 people in that area. That's a nice step right before you hit the suburbs.
So do you have a distributor that is sending the beer that way? Or
we do, yep. So we don't self-distribute. Everything that we produce is distributed by local distributors in every direction. So
what's the furthest that you've got it coming out?
So right now we're completely covered in the entire northern half of Illinois. And then we've just branched out into kind of semi-central Wisconsin, from kind of like north of Rockford in the Janesville area, straight up north to 94, right between Milwaukee and Madison. So we're kind of building on that little, that little heartline right there. And that's going really well. So at this point, before the end of 2020, we will be distributing into both cities, Milwaukee and Madison. Mm-hmm. We're also dabbling with Iowa right now, new Iowa distributors that we can help move down the Riverside.
Because you're pretty darn close to them.
Yeah. we'll also be dealing with some Indiana distributors as well.
Oh, really?
So that'll be helpful.
Well, cool. You're expanding out, but I want to bring it back in the next segment to find out a little bit more about you and where you grew up, and actually Freeport, and why the hell it's called Pretzel City.
Yeah.
Freeport is known as the Pretzel City, and you make Pretzel City Amber, of which we have a sample here. Amber's being the least favorite of all my beer styles. I'm going to taste this while you tell us, why is it called Pretzel City? So and why did you, well, I know why you called it Pretzel City Amber, but why Pretzel City?
That is our city's nickname. Our high school mascot is the Pretzels. I grew up as a pretzel.
Is that really? Is there a pretzel costume?
There is a pretzel costume. Excellent. And a mascot. Yeah.
Does he have mustard?
Well, you know what?
It should doesn't. Be beer cheese.
I think I just came up with a new idea, like for homecoming, where we all just squirt mustard bottles at him.
Right on.
I love it.
Thank you. You can have that one.
Yes. I will take that.
That would be excellent. Yellow mustard over a whole guy.
So
he doesn't listen to this.
The heritage came actually from Freeport being a very predominantly brewing-centric city back around the turn of the 20th century. So kind of as, you know, right before 1900, Galena was just about as big as Chicago was. So there was a lot of traffic, obviously, going back and forth between Chicago from Lake Michigan to the Mississippi River. Galena was huge, Chicago was huge, and Freeport was kind of almost at the halfway point. So the community started out here. We had over 15 breweries within our city limits.
Wow.
Before Prohibition.
Wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. An insane amount of breweries for any local region. So along with all the brewing heritage, and obviously that's a big part of our name, why we, you know, Generations is called it what it is, not only with our, you know, being a family-owned company, you know, along with brewing came bakeries. So when they built the high school in 1880-something, it was definitely before 19th century, they wanted to name the mascot after one of the most prominent businesses in town. And obviously, with dealing with kids and education, all that, being the Freeport Beers wasn't kind of acceptable. So there were plenty of bakeries in the area going along with it. And so we became the Freeport Pretzels.
And so does that mean that there was a large German population?
Extremely large.
Okay. Yeah. So hence your base beers being lager-based, right?
Yep.
So a lot of German heritage in this area.
Absolutely.
Did you put pretzels in this?
Yes. We actually take locally made pretzels and put them into the mash tun.
Are they soft ones or hard ones?
They're hard pretzels.
But they're soft when they come out.
They break down pretty
soggy.
Soft. Yeah.
Soggy.
So
that's another name for one. Soggy pretzels.
Yeah.
No,
I think it's great. Like, I can smell the kind of toasted pretzel in the nose a little bit. And I definitely get the salt in the finish.
Ken?
Yes,
you've been sampling that and swishing it around, and you probably know ambers more than me.
I like ambers. I don't know why you don't like ambers.
Well, okay, so this one actually, it doesn't strike me as an amber, but I definitely got that salty kind of dry, makes me want to have more type of food.
I'd say it's
definitely. And it's not overly sweet with caramel malts.
Mm-hmm.
There's definitely a nice hop backbone to it, so that's going to citrus it up and finish it out. But yeah, there's definitely more of a salty.
To me, the caramel malt comes through more as like more like bready or biscuity.
Yeah,
and that may be partly the
I go heavy
too.
On melanoid malt over caramel malt.
There is a slight citrus.
Ashburn mild malt.
Okay.
Quite a bit. And a lot of Vienna.
Do you have a favorite malt that you use?
No, I don't. I've got so many favorite malts.
favorite hop?
So many favorite hops.
So many favorite hops, yeah.
I think it's a really delicious beer. It's a lighter bodied finish and clean finish.
It's just easy drinking. It's what I call
too.
A football beer. You know, there's lawnmower beer where you can drink lawn mowing beer all day and never get drunk. And then there's football beer where you can drink it all day and get drunk. So I call that a football bear.
You have to with the Bears. No, yeah. So you're close to Wisconsin here. Yeah. Bears or Packers?
Oh, we're Bears fans.
Okay, good man.
Yeah. And beyond the Bears fans, we're Illini fans.
Okay.
So my whole family is, you know,
you're
University
an Illini,
of
alumni.
Alumni, right. Yes.
Yeah, that rhymes. Illini alumni.
Yep.
They're doing all right in their football, aren't they?
They were doing great until yesterday.
Oh.
But no.
Sorry, I spoke. Well,
we've had some amazing games this year, and we'll see a bowl. I believe so. We are bowl eligible. If we would have beat Northwestern yesterday, that would have guaranteed us one. But
oh, you played Northwestern?
For some reason, we couldn't make that win.
Was that Saturday or Sunday?
That was, I'm sorry, Saturday.
Because it's Monday. See,
yes.
Now,
yes.
We're doing this
I'm
on a
day
Monday, and, you know, he's all messed
well,
up.
Well, the holiday every day is.
Yeah, right.
Oh, yeah, this weekend.
Every day is
blur.
A Saturday.
So staying with the German theme, you wanted us to try your pills, mm-hmm. which you describe as a Danish-style
yes.
rye pills now.
So it's half Belgian Pilsner malt, half German Pilsner malt. And then it's Danish lager yeast and all Czech hops. So it's like a Euro hodgepodge of a Pilsner.
Wow. And you've added rye to it.
And there's rye.
Is that
English
unusual?
Rye.
English rye?
English
okay.
rye.
Oh,
yeah.
My God. Wait a minute. We're not part of Europe anymore.
All right, yeah.
Well, we won't be as soon as they get it all sorted out. Ken, is that unusual to put rye in a Pilsner?
I would say, yeah. I'm not sure. I've seen it. But, you know... I'm guessing it's really restrained.
It's only about 15% rye.
This is only 5.5.
5.3.
Yep,
5.3. And it drinks a lot lighter than that.
Mm-hmm.
So you were talking about a Bud Light alternative. Well, this is much better than a Bud Light, but yep. I can see where you can suggest this to people. Really unusual. And I'm getting the kind of a, I don't know what it is, something at the end of it.
Yeah.
Are you tasting like some spice? I mean, you might get that from the rye malt, like a little black pepper.
Something at the end of it that's kind of unusual that I'm getting into.
Might be those Czech hops.
The Czech hops. Oh, there we go.
Mm-hmm.
That
noble hop.
Yes, it is.
It's
this is really good.
Very nice.
I haven't had a.
No,
even the amber.
They're in really, really good condition. They're beautiful. This is golden and clear. You can see all the way through it. It's,
thank you.
It's got a little sweetness, a little mm-hmm. malty sweetness. It's a really delicious beer.
And I like that you mentioned that because it's something like I'm really proud of is, you know, you guys keep saying like it doesn't taste like it's that strong in alcohol content. So there's a lot of drinkability to the beers. It's not because they're thin and watered down and, you know, you can just, you know, slurp them. It's a combination of making sure that the beers are extremely clean in fermentation so that they're not giving you anything afterwards that you have to taste or worry about. And then on top of that, we actually carbonate our beers ever so slightly lower than most standards.
Okay.
And I do that intentionally just because I love to be able to drink a few beers and not feel bloated afterwards, you know? So instead of drinking, you know, 6 or 7 domestic beers, I can drink 2 or 3 of my own and feel the same way in my stomach than I would with all the carbonation inside.
So let's talk some of the specs of your brewery. Tell us what you got back there, because as we sit here in the tap room, there's a large window underneath your logo, which is an inverted, well, I guess it's the roots of a tree, right? Obviously,
yeah,
standing for the generations of
yes,
the windows,
yes,
right?
And, that is our original logo here.
So
it's, about the equipment. Basically, we were blessed to buy brand new equipment from Premier Stainless. It was a company that I worked with at Galena Brewing Company and was always impressed with by their stuff and their equipment and their game. So I wanted to inherit that here and make sure that we would build a system that was going to be sustainable for large scale production, as well as keeping up with the pub, which was, you know, obviously a part of the system, but to eventually be a regional brewery, you know, maybe not national, maybe not international or anything like that. You know,
but just got sent it to Canada. That's
yeah,
all.
But it, you know, as long as we can make enough beer and you know, make it happen so that we can turn the lights on every day and do it again. That's all that matters for us.
And do you have room for expansion back there?
That we do. Yep.
And is that in the
that
future?
That is in the future and in the works.
Future.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And so, how many people do you have working with you on staff here? Because this is a big place, and I'm thinking, you know, you said today was not a brew day.
No, today is a getting everything put together today. Like kind of basically organizing our production schedule for the month, and maybe in January as well. So we do a lot of, you know, managers meetings here in the first week of the month. But really, you know, what we've got back there is a team of really qualified people, and it's very small. So as myself, as the owner and brewmaster, co-owner being my father and I, and basically family investors in the LLC, he and I run all the business operations. Mm-hmm. So everything from accounting to blah, 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 and all the details you guys know, nobody really cares about. Running the business operations is what he and I do. Then my primary position is obviously being brewmaster, is to run production. Mm-hmm. So I've got a lead brewer who takes care of pretty much all the daily operations back there. He and I tag team brewing, but he takes care of all the really hard work as far as fermentation, and transfers and packaging, and basically making beer from A to Z. He takes care of that. And then we have an assistant brewer as well, who helps him make sure that all of that gets done. So there's really only three of us in the brew house. Mm. Up front, you know, our tap room's really small, so I have a front of house manager who's part-time, and she does everything from taking care of, you know, events that need to happen here in the tap room, scheduling bartenders, which we only have a couple of, making sure all that stuff happens up here so that I don't have to worry about it all the time. And then I have a brand manager, and her job is to get out there in the market and obviously make the connection between our distributors, us, mm-hmm. our distributors, and our retailers.
And they're all local people.
And they're all local people, yes.
Yeah. So it's very much a Freeport business.
So there's half a dozen of us, and then, you know, if you count our part-time bartenders, maybe just over a dozen.
So I've been sitting here with two beers in front of me. We've gone through the pills and the amber, and extremely delightful everyday drinking beers, if you will. But I think something that's going to challenge some people's palates has been sitting in front of us for a while. And I want to come back in the last segment here and kind of focus on those, because I've been sitting here with this aroma that has been wafting across my nose consistently. And it's all something to do with jelly donuts, but we'll come back and find out in a minute. Our final beers that we're going to taste, you've got such a good selection on here. One that we haven't tasted, but is Live Free Porter, a nitro English style black ale. Yum. The one that's been sitting in front of us, tempting us, it's a Berliner Weiss, right?
Correct.
And the first one is called Jelly Donut. Tell us the facts about that one, and then we'll get on to the slightly more aggressive one.
Sure.
Which is a variant of that, correct?
Yes. Okay. So the Jelly Donut is, like you said, a Berliner Weiss that we love brewing because it actually takes several days to brew it versus like the normal 6 to 8 hours that any other batch would do. So we actually love getting started with this brew early, a week beforehand. We'll make mini mashes with barley, about 5 gallon buckets full of barley and hot water, and we'll grow our own lactic bacteria culture, which is going to create all the lactic acid that we need to make the beer tart. Mm-hmm. So then the following week, once all that culture's grown, we'll come into our brew house and we'll mash in an all barley and heavy wheat based mash, and lauter it and fill our boil kettle. But instead of bringing it to a boil, we actually run it through backwards through our heat exchanger and cool it down to about 105 degrees. Mm-hmm. And that's when we pour all the funk juice from the mini cultures of the mini sour mashes that we made from the week before.
That's a good beer name, by the
way.
Funk juice.
Funk juice.
It's probably been used.
Yeah.
4 times.
So we'll pour that culture into the kettle, and we'll actually use the kettle as a fermenter for 48 hours to let all that lactic bacteria sour out our kettle completely and drop the pH from normal 4.5 to 5 pH balance of a normal beer down to almost close to about 3 pH. So doesn't sound like a big move, but it has a huge difference to the tongue.
To the
tongue. I have no
idea what the hell that means.
Yeah, it makes
sounds
it
good to me.
Very acidic.
Well, 3 pH is really acidic.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the beer becomes quite tart. So then from there, we'll boil it off to kill off our lactic bacteria culture that we inoculated it with. Mm. And we'll put it into a fermenter with our normal American ale yeast and let it start to ferment. A few days later, in the middle of its fermentation, we'll add about 80 pounds of organic blueberry puree and organic tart cherry puree into the fermenter. So the yeast will, as they're finishing up eating all the malt sugars, will then start to convert over and start eating all the fruit sugars too, as well as all the acidity that's coming from the blueberries and cherries. I'll also drop the pH as well. So from there, we cold condition the beer in true German traditional style, and we are ready to go with our spring seasonal. It's our second quarter, what we call an early or late spring seasonal, early summer seasonal.
So I was surprised to hear you say blueberries,
mm-hmm.
because the color is almost a light rose color.
Yeah.
That's what you end up with from blueberries.
You get a fleshy, peachy kind of color.
Okay. And then where does the jelly donut come in? Because I was half expecting you to say, we put jelly donuts in there.
So not quite that obvious as much as the Pretzel City is. There's always a good story about John F. Kennedy went over to Berlin and gave a speech, and he said, "Ich bin ein Berliner," as he was trying to relate to everybody he was talking to. And they all started laughing at him because even in Berlin, a Berliner is a jelly donut.
Oh, we're all a jelly donut?
So
I'm a jelly donut?
Berliner,
he said, I am a
jelly donut.
That's why I started laughing at him. But you have all the ingredients there. So you have the wheat, you have the flour that you would make the donut dough with, and then you have all the fruit for the jelly puree. So it's basically a liquid jelly donut, fermented out, sour.
And does this sell year-round? Because I think a lot of people think, because it's less alcohol, what is it, 3 point something?
Yeah. 3.8. And it is definitely, it's our summer beer, so we promote it, obviously, and that's where we...
But it goes very well. I mean, it's great if you want something lighter.
Honestly, we do have it almost year-round just because everybody really loves that beer. It's a cult following for it.
It's really
it's
good.
A love it or hate it style.
Mm-hmm.
There's people who are like, oh my God, what? This doesn't make sense. This is not a beer. I would never drink this ever.
There's also still a large percentage of people that buy by ABV, and this is too low for them.
Yeah.
Right. But this is delicious.
But then I also have this following where, when we run out of it, I get phone calls going, where can I find jelly donut? Mm-hmm. Where can I find jelly donut? I need it. I'm feening for it. I need it now. So,
yeah, and it's
just a fun, unique beer.
Sparkly. You know, there's a lot of effervescence on the tongue.
It's really not terribly tart either. I mean, it's you're talking about the pH being pretty low, but it doesn't come across that way. I think the juice might actually temper
that. What's the PV
that.
Value?
And the malt body. There's a PV? Nice...
A pucker value.
Yeah, pucker value. And, you know, the way I multi-step my mashes and stuff, that malt body from that wheat really stands up, too, and helps clean it up and make it, you know, nice and silky and creamy. So there's to work with it there.
So we move over to the one that's been sitting here wafting across my nose.
Yes,
and Smelly Donut. Okay, so tell us the story of this one.
Okay. So we took a batch of...
And by the way, guys, it does smell initially like blue cheese.
Yes. It is extremely pungent. So 3 years ago, when we made a batch of jelly donut... Actually, we've been making jelly donut for almost 6 years now. We actually started brewing it before the facility was even open when we were contract brewing at Galena. As I was making the... You know, the transit between breweries, we started making our brands there before our facility was being opened.
Oh, okay.
So we brewed our first batch of jelly donut up there. So it would have been the second, almost 4 years ago now, that we took a batch of jelly donut and we decided to put it into both Jack Daniel's barrels and French Bordeaux barrels. And a blend of them, along with more cherries, blueberries, and even some blackberries as well. Another culture of Brettanomyces and Pediococcus, which are wild yeast and bacteria that are, you know, probiotics and good for you, but will totally dominate the flavor profile of the fermentation of the beer. And so that's why you're getting that extremely hard, pungent cheese character is from all that Brett. And then you get a lot of that. It finishes off like a kind of like a champagne vinaigrette kind of mouthfeel in the back of your throat.
I'm not certain I've ever had a champagne vinaigrette.
Yeah, or just like any sort of like salad vinaigrette, you know, like something that's got a really, really sour character to
it. So at the end of it, I got a little creaminess, which brings me back full circle to the blue cheesy aroma, which is kind of cool.
I think some of that, you might be getting some of the whiskey notes.
Is like that what
the,
it is?
From the whiskey barrel.
And the oak is there for sure, yeah.
For sure there's oak in there. Yeah. And
I don't think I've had a beer that's quite so unique.
Well, I think most beers that are aged that long in barrels are not this low ABV.
Yeah.
So you got a lot more of that.
That was kind of an experiment that I really wanted to see how much oak it would adapt, and it certainly did. And it grew its own culture, so it protected itself for that long of a period of time. And what just came out of it was just every barrel had its own unique character to it. Mm-hmm. They were all very different. So then what we ended up doing was blending them all together in a sample and decided that the blend was perfect. It had every attribute of everything that we wanted out of each of the six barrels. And that's how we blended it back together to bottle it.
So how is this sold? Because I'm going to think this is a beer for a... advanced palate, shall we say?
Mm-hmm.
One who's looking, who's had a lot of beers,
sure.
You know, different craft beers, different Bretts, different all this, you know, the funky stuff.
And I would definitely call it a food beer, you know. It's, you know, we have it in 16-ounce wax dip bottles, so it's definitely meant for special occasions. And it's not just for, you know, drinking on its own. It really does well when being paired with Immaculate Foods. The last thing I ate with this beer was I made a rack of lamb, and then I took the lamb, basically medallions and the lollipops, and then seared them on gorgonzola butter, and it went so nicely with that. With a little side salad of a raspberry vinaigrette,
there you go,
on the salad with some blue cheese in there and some nuts, you know, just pairing the food with it.
I have some Stilton in my fridge at the moment. which is very difficult to get good Stilton over here, but I found it. And you know if Stilton is a little bit traveled, we call it, because it doesn't travel well, because a good Stilton in England is creamy and white.
Yes.
Just off-white. But when you see slight sweat marks and it goes a little brown on the edges, you know it's traveled a little bit. Mm-hmm. Got some that's really good. Enough about cheese. But this, I'm going to have cheap blue Stilton, and I'm going to get a bottle of this to take home with me, because then I can have this, some Stilton cheese, and maybe a little brie. I got some creamy brie.
Brie would be
just
nice.
Just a whole cheese and a slight bit of mango chutney, and I'm going to have a good time.
Yeah.
I think, I mean, there's a lot of flavors going on in this. Brett characteristics are, people describe them as like barnyard funk or horse blanket. And I think this definitely, because it's so low ABV, you really perceive that in here. And then at the finish, I get just a extreme tart lingering in the back of my throat.
Yeah.
It's really an interesting beer.
And I think this is definitely, you said it was just a 16 ounce?
Yes, right? They're in 16 ounce
This
bottles.
Is definitely a beer to share. In a very small snifter with someone, because of the impact of it, I think you don't want to have
a little too goes much. A long way.
Yeah. Looks like you numbered and initialed the bottles.
Yep.
How many did you end up with?
It was our first barrel age. Well, we started a living barrels project, so we ended up with about 24 cases of this beer.
And how many you got left?
Like two or three.
Cases or bottles?
Yeah, cases. Okay. So.
Wow. So, folks, if you hear this podcast, I would advise coming out to Freeport and picking up a bottle of this before it's gone. Are you going to do other ones? I mean, Living Barrels Project suggests an ongoing...
So this is the first one. We've done several other barrel-aged beers, but this was the first barrel-aged beer that we actually labeled and bottled. So our second one will be coming out this spring. We'll be doing
and what's that going to be, sneak preview? Possibly edging here.
It'll probably be a beer.
Okay, good. All right. Thought we got an exclusive there, Ken. All right, so
it'll be fun.
You guys obviously have a bright future. You're doing well here in Freeport. And by the way, you're just slightly out of the center of Freeport, right?
Yes.
So like a mile or two down
the
road.
Just on the east edge of town. So we're incredibly easy to get to, especially if you're coming from Chicago or Rockford.
Absolutely. 90 minutes or less, depending on if you put the pedal to the metal.
I can make it to downtown Rockford in 20 minutes.
Yeah.
I can make it to the burbs in an hour. Okay. I mean, we are pretty close. We're not that far out. So
in the future, what have you got that is going to have, you know, changed beers? What beers do you like brewing? What beer would you like to brew if you had that opportunity? You didn't, you know, try anything?
You know, we're an ever-evolving brewery. Even our staples and our classic brands always get tweaked on. You know, we want to make sure that they're growing. They're not stagnant. We work really hard as far as our sanitation process goes. So we know whether we work on beers and we change the profile a little bit here or there, whether or not it tastes exactly the way we want it to, using new ingredients and having fun experimenting. With the background of sanitation that we do, we know it's still always going to be a damn good beer, no matter what.
So what beer would you like to brew if you had an opportunity? Is this something you've not done yet that you want to do?
Oh, there's a whole world of beer out there to accomplish. I think maybe I'll make a Baltic Porter next week.
Ooh, yes. Well done.
Yeah.
Good answer. I like the Baltic Porters.
I think I'd like to point out that their license is a brew pub license.
Yep.
And with that, they have wine and some liquor on hand. So because this is it's a decent drive from the city... if you have a non-beer drinker with you, there are options here. I think I saw cider in the fridge and some other options.
Yeah, I'm glad you pointed that out. Thanks. We do offer pretty much everything for everybody, including the kiddos. We actually have a playset in our beer garden. A my 2-year-old son and everybody else who loves to come out and play while their parents, you know, have enjoy a beer, can bring the whole family. We're also dog friendly too. Since we don't have a kitchen, we don't have a restaurant. The health department's more than okay that, you know, obviously everybody's dogs and are welcome.
Cool. Know. So, thank you, Ken. You reminded me. The one question I was going to ask was, have you jumped on the seltzer, the hard seltzer bandwagon yet?
No.
Will you?
No.
Okay. And with that...
Never say never, though.
Never say never, yeah. Well, he hasn't done hazes, he hasn't done the hard seltzers.
I like what he's making.
He's just done some
making,
really good beers. Come on.
These beers are good. I like what he's doing out here.
We're just going to brew some beers.
Going to brew some beers, yeah. Well, and I think
we're going to work hard and make sure we're doing good at that.
Yeah,
not get distracted.
You have to appeal to your audience, right? I mean, you have to appeal to the people who are around here. Maybe they're not ready for that yet. I don't know.
I think maybe I'm gonna make a carrot puree and see if I can't ferment that.
A carrot puree.
Yeah.
A carrot.
Like
beer.
We were talking about.
That would be really interesting. I don't think even Scratch has done carrots, have they? Would that be a beer or what?
I don't know.
Would that be officially a vegan beer? Was beer vegan?
Beer is vegan,
beer,
yes.
As long as
there's no honey.
Isinglass.
Yes. As long as you don't use Isinglass, which has fish oil and fish bladders or whatever. And honey is not vegan as well. So
okay.
Yes. Barley hops and yeast and water.
I heard people yesterday arguing that because there's yeast in there and yeast is alive, that beer's not vegan.
It's a lie.
It doesn't have a face, though, so it should be all right, right?
Well, okay, so honey doesn't have a face either. It's like a bee that brings it in, right? Creates it and does wonderful things.
Is it because
it's an animal byproduct?
Is it an animal byproduct?
It is.
Wait a minute, it comes from pollen.
No, but the bees have to convert it from pollen to honey.
Oh, they do?
That's an insect, though.
That's a Oh my God! Where are we going with this?
Where are we going here?
By the way, you have a select number of hot sauces that we saw on your shelf up there.
We sure do. Yes, locally
local?
Made, right here in Freeport.
And I like the name of one of them, Wicked Pisser.
Wicked Pisser.
Is that like
that
a brand?
That is the name of the brand.
Brandt's
Wicked Pisser hot sauce.
All right.
An amazing company put together by very close friends of mine. And they are doing wonderful things. And they've got an assortment of all sorts of different stuff. From sweet and smoky to like melt your face off hot. So all
so
sorts
come
of
on
good
down
examples.
For your hot sauce,
yeah. Yeah. Really
you
good
can order
stuff.
A pizza and then put the hot sauce on it.
Yep.
We usually end up our show with clanking of glasses. Now he hasn't been drinking, okay? So he's obviously got to be brewing today. But we've got some glasses. So thanks very much indeed. Oh, hang on a minute.
Cheers to you, gentlemen.
$64,000 question at the end of it.
Oh.
Address, telephone number, website.
Of course. So you can find us here in Freeport, Illinois, at 1400 South Adams Avenue. And we are located right on the east edge of town. So if you take the bypass coming from Rockford, we're the first exits, and you can find us very easily. Our webpage is www.generationsbrewing.com. You can easily find us on Facebook, Instagram, all sorts of social media, Yelp, Google. Just type it in Google. You'll find us.
And the phone
Not too
number?
Hard. Our phone number is 815-616-5941.
Ding ding, he wins $64,000.
I just want to thank both you gentlemen for coming out and doing this for us, and we had a blast, and thanks for to everybody who's listening today.
Yep, our thanks to you, Stephen, for brilliant beers. It's good night from me.
And good night from him.
We've done cheers, but let's do it again.
And good night to all. Happy holidays.
Yes, which ones? They've gone. Thanksgiving. Oh, now we got
there's more to
Christmas
come.
Coming in. Yeah,
there's a whole lot coming.
Yeah. Oh, Wintergreen IPA. You can buy that for me for Christmas, Ken.
Okay.
We'll get
certainly.
That. Santa, instead of Santa's cookies and milk, we'll have cookies and Wintergreen IPA.
Yeah, we'll drink the Christmas tree.
Or the Cranacopia. That would be good.
Oh, there we go.
That's that a really nice double stop.
You'll never get back up the bloody chimney.
That's right.
Britain Yankee! Britain Yankee! I'll have a pint, you go. Give us a pint. You got any tetanus?
A pint, please, Bob. Give another pint, please, Bob.